Ladies and gentlemen,
this is Gamertag Radio.
I'm Mike, founder and creative director here at Maverick Games. Joining us on the pad today is Susie. She's a QA manager, and she's going to be the expert driver that's going to help us with the demo. We're going to start off with a series of vignettes. This is the real game and how it boots, where we're going to get a sense of our characters, our story, and some of the gameplay that we'll experience throughout this thing. We start in 2010 in London with Theo and Cass, our two protagonists, as kids, and I'll let the game talk. A fun fact, young Theo is played by my son, also called Theo. Not the only bad decision we'll see Theo make in this game, but after getting told off by his social worker after another foster placement wasn't going to work out for him and Cass, he's chosen to run. So he's kind of jumped into the front seat and driven away in his social worker's Fiat Multipla. I'll forgive you if you didn't watch it, but a couple of weeks ago, we ran a 10-day-long live stream on our YouTube channel, which finished with us revealing the game last Tuesday. Most of that live stream was a camera pointed at this Fiat Multipla. It was this exact one. It was one that we bought and scanned to put into the game. Theo ran away. Didn't get too far, unfortunately. So that's... We will have other times in the game. We'll flash back to young Theo. But now, we jump actually to after the events of the main story. We now see kind of Theo, fully grown, kind of master of his powers. And at this point, he's kind of full vigilante. But as I say, this is kind of after the events of the main story. I remember this was the future after the main story. We're now going to jump back in time. So this is Theo in a midnight collective street race. This is in the city of Corinne, which is a fictional city that we've made that combines a few pieces of different French cities in the middle of the French Riviera.
Is any time soon?
Yes. Position again. At this time, we're going to have our first opportunity to play as Cass. And so this is Cass, Theo's younger sister, and it's going to give us a little taster of some of the off-road driving experiences in Clutch. And from there, we jump to present day and our main story kicks off. So we're now going to join Theo and Cass on the starting grid of a Riviera 1K race, sometimes called the R1K. This is the kind of the most prestigious, most important sporting institution in the world. And everybody in our rendering of the French Riviera is obsessed with the Riviera 1K. We're now going to meet Ludo, the adopted dad of Theo and Cass, and also the manager of their racing team, Marshall Celeste. So into our first R1K race. So with the R1K, we wanted it to feel like it had a real kind of a sense of place, a sense of history. This is the 100th year it's been running. And so I got a writing team to write out a full almanac, like when did it start? Why did it start? Who are the famous people that have raced in it? Who are the famous winners? When did each of these racing teams first appear? And even though all of that might not be said in the game, some of it will be. And we want there to be a consistent voice and a consistent history to this thing. And that's led to some kind of cool moment. So some of the races are kind of heritage races where you'll be racing in older cars, and then that starts to think, oh, why are we doing that? What's the reason for that? What happened in 1974 that led to this becoming a heritage race? And that then leads us to, well, in that race, all of the cars are going to be in the paint jobs that they would have had back in the 1970s, and they'll look appropriately aged, as though this race has been happening every year since then. And it just gives the thing a sense of real place and texture, which makes an interesting kind of centerpiece to the game, and also a thing that we do kind of like hang a lot of our story off of. So this music, along with all the music you've heard so far, with the exception of the Robbie Williams track that was playing in the 2010 sequence, is composed by our in-house composer, Dave Fox. It's over 200 minutes of original composition, some performed by full orchestra like this piece, some of it with live band. A lot of it, we combine those two pieces together. That gives us a kind of full original soundtrack that allows us to score all of the R1K races, all of our cinematics, all of our kind of main story missions. So if ever you're playing in streamer mode, you've still got a full musical experience. That's backed up with several playlists of licensed music, one of which is on now, Cass is talking. And each of those playlists is themed around a kind of vibe or a feeling. So you have like high speed, you have laid back. So they're not genre focused, they're more feeling focused. So if you're feeling like you want to play chilled out, laid back, just want to drive across the Riviera, we've got a playlist for that. Additionally, we have a sequence of podcasts. They're intended to fill in some of the backstory, fill in some of the how the rest of the world feels about things that are going on. Here's one by Alex, who's the guy who runs the Midnight Collective, who we'll meet in a bit. He's then talking about the fact that there's been this crash, that the R1K are going to change some of the race rules to try and make it a bit safer. Yeah, I'm going to sort that meet him down a little bit though, so we can talk about Theo. So Theo, one of our two protagonists, and you'll play as both of them throughout the game. He's played by Tosin Cole. Tosin, you may know, he was the lead character in Supercell. He's had a role in Star Wars. He's been in a few seasons of Doctor Who. He's a great actor. It's his first appearance in a game, but he's brought a real soul to this character. Tossin's like, he's super charming, super funny, but he's also got a bit of an edge, and it's like he's able to kind of like move around within scenes in a way that's just really gripping at times. Also got quite a lot of subtlety to the performance, which fortunately is able to be picked up now because the performance capture technology is so good. We're about to have a sequence where he's going to get into an argument with his dad, and there's a moment in it where his dad shouts at him. He's really obviously thinking about shouting back, but you see his mind moving and making the decision to just kind of like, you know, I'm going to leave, I'm going to walk away. Yeah, and it's just a really, really like lovely performance, honestly. We're heading up towards Theo and Cass's villa. Technically not actually in Monaco. This is in France at the moment, but it's a kind of central hub location where you'll come here quite often. It's where you'll come to customize your car. It's where you'll come to like customize the characters, change all your outfits, and a few missions kind of like intersect through there as well. Amazing views over Monaco as well, which I'm sure in real life would cost an extraordinary amount.
Yes.
Talked a little bit about Theo. I'll mention Cass as well. We're still playing as Theo at this point, by the way, but we will get to play as Cass before too long. So Cass is played by Little Sims. Don't know if you guys are big fans of UK hip-hop, but if you were, you'd be super excited that the Sims is in this thing. She's kind of the biggest British rapper at the moment and one of the biggest female rappers in the world. Also a really, really talented actor. So if you've seen Top Boy, she's the girlfriend of the main character. She was in the second Venom movie. Last year, she did a movie on Netflix called Steve alongside Cillian Murphy. And she's brilliant in that. And she brings so much heart and soul to this character. At the point at which we've met them right now, kind of Theo is the kind of star driver on their team. He's the more famous one. Everything is kind of like circled around him. She's really in the background. And honestly, the story is a bit mean to Cass at the start of the game. Intentionally, obviously, we wrote the story. But people were really going to fall in love with Cass. And over the course of the game, they're both going to really interesting arc. So Theo is already at the moment, he's kind of like, he has everything at the moment, but he is going to kind of really make some really pretty bad decisions, which are going to throw all that away. And he's going to have to learn how to kind of win all that back, repair his reputation, and kind of learn how important family is. Cass at the moment is kind of getting trod on a little bit. She's kind of really working to try and hold the family together. She's going to learn, do you know what? You need to take a little bit for yourself. And she's going to have a bit of an ascendancy and become a star in her own right. But both of them go on really interesting arcs over the course of the story and really both grow as people. Just falling off the side there. And that was the end of the story. We never saw Cass again. I don't think I've seen her do that before. Yeah, there we go.
In development build.
Now, I've seen her get stuck here. That's the first time she's just like stacked off that cliff. All right, so imagine we're still following Cass. Yeah, at this point, just as a note, we are actually just in the open world at the moment. Susie could, if she wanted to, just drive off in any direction and explore the map. All the collectibles are now open. Open world challenges are open. So as much as we've kind of set your destination here, and frankly, we've locked it here, you can't change the way that the blue line will take you. The open world is open and available at this point. Down here, this isn't Monaco. This is the city of Corinne, and one of the other urban areas in the game, and off in the distance was Saint-Tropez. So it's the full, you kind of see the full coast. Theo's followed Cass, and in doing so, he's discovered that she'd been coming here to hang out with the Midnight Collective. It's the first time he's been there. And as we saw there, Cass not thrilled that Theo's found out she's coming here. This has been a bit of a sanctuary to her that now he has turned up in, and I guess she's worried that he's going to kind of be the star here as well. So worth a note, hopefully you've spotted it, but our car models are incredibly detailed, to kind of like the most detail you'll have seen in any game. And that applies to every single car, including all traffic cars. One of the powers of Unreal Engine 5 through Nanite is to allow you to go to incredible amounts of detail and still hold frame rates as long as you do your work, which we have done. So we and this the car meet intended to kind of be very much like real life authentic car meets. It's not intended to be like overly cool, overly dude bro. It's kind of, all these people are kind of a bit nerdy. There is a shop over here where you'd be able to buy Midnight Collective merch. Online, this is a social space and you'll be able to check out other people's cars. It's also the place that you'll go to. You can hear it. It's also the place you'll go to purchase older cars, newer cars. We have showrooms around the map that you can go and purchase them. Here, older cars you'll be available to buy as well. So Alex is kind of describing the race that we're about to go into. So this is a Midnight Collective race. It's distinct from the R1K, obviously. Whereas in the R1K, it's all about finishing position. Nothing else matters. Here, finishing position is important, but also you have to drive with style as well. The theme for this is that unlike the R1K, which would be broadcast on ESPN or Sky Sports, this is being broadcast online, and instead we've got like a live stream format to it. At this point, not actually that many people watching it, but there is like a live chat, and then the live chat are effectively choosing who they want to win. And you see, the currency you're trying to earn is viewers. The more viewers that are supporting you, the more chance you have to win. You get the viewers to support you by driving fast, driving stylishly, or responding to requests from the chat. So sometimes the chat will kind of make requests, and then you have to try to perform the moves they've asked you to do. So because this is the first race that we'll see in the Midnight Collective, no one's turned up to watch. There's not that many viewers, only four cars in the race. Over the course of the game, all that changes. More and more people will be in the races. The streets will be lined with people. There'll be like much more people watching. Here we go. Here's one of the requests that have come in from chat. They want to see Susie pull off a drift. Didn't count because you hit the fence. You got to do it without hitting anything. Oh, Susie, you got this. Nice one. So Alex did mention it, but I was kind of talking over him. The checkpoints, you do get viewers for going for the checkpoints because you're using the correct line, but they're not required. You can skip them if you want. If you think there's an idea for a shortcut, you're allowed to skip them. You could go straight off that cliff if you wanted to. Probably wouldn't recommend it in this car, but if you'd built an off-road car for it, then that might have been a good option. Another kind of, like, I guess, narrative note at this point: street racing is not illegal in our world. Like, the police just don't care about this. It's totally cool. This is a world though where everyone's kind of obsessed with cars and racing, and so this is seen as totally fine. In a similar vein, I'll just mention it: guns just don't exist in this universe. We'll just never see them. I never really want the characters to have access to guns, but equally, when you're in a high-speed chase, it's just more kind of fun and interesting if they can't just try and shoot out your tires or something. It just keeps the gameplay more fun and keeps it more car-focused. Susie always taking that shortcut's quite high risk. I think Susie, you pulled it off that time, Susie. It's a good job. Right, we're just triggering a super mode, which you've got for an opportunity you can get if you've been driving stylishly. That acts as a multiplier on all the points you're earning at that point, at the moment. Well, I guess, Susie, you have helpfully showed that it's not about finishing position, because because you still have the most viewers, because you responded to those viewer requests. You did drive stylishly, so Susie wins despite not actually crossing the finish line first. So good job, Susie. So now this is the arcade cabinet that exists inside Theo and Cass's villa. We use this to kind of communicate some of the metagame stuff. It's also kind of wrapped up in one of our themes around nostalgia. Nostalgia around Monaco and the environment, nostalgia around cars, nostalgia around music, and this just helps kind of feed into that some more. Also, because as a game developer, we're a little bit extra at times, there's also a game on that arcade cabinet, which is called Turbo Boy, which gives you opportunity to win money or cars. Let's see if you're going to get lucky this time. It's completely unrigged, by the way. 10K, there you go. So, yeah, Turbo Boy has the opportunity to be incredibly lucky or incredibly unlucky. The tokens that let you play Turbo Boy are one of the collectibles in the open world as well. So we've found the team getting pretty obsessed with it. And to the point at which we started to question, is Clutch just the game that comes with Turbo Boy, or is Turbo Boy the minigame? So just use a quick debug setting to jump us forward in time a little bit. We're skipping about 20 minutes of content there. What would have happened there is we'd have driven back to the villa, we'd have had our first chance to switch to players Cass, take part in an R1K race, and then we'd go back to Theo, where he would have been tasked with going to visit, to go to attend an R1K gala in Monaco. Theo never makes it to that gala. It's in a cinematic. As he's walking through Casino Square, he overhears somebody trash-talking Miko, kind of celebrating Miko's death. Theo didn't like that and made a very regrettable decision of stealing that guy's car, and he regretted that really, really quickly. Which leads him to this position where he is now he's now seeking a fixer to help him get out of this mess. I'll take this moment to talk a little bit about Monaco. So, a version of Monaco, actually slightly larger than real life Monaco. I've allowed the level designers to add a little bit more room than you might find in the real place. Monaco, famously very tight and very dense. This is still pretty dense, but it's certainly got a little bit more space than real life Monaco. We have tried to keep a lot of the road diversity that you would see in Monaco, though, so we still have kind of single lane roads like this one. There's two lane roads. There are wider, kind of like 4 to 6 lane A roads, but for the most part, it's quite tight, which I think gives it a really nice variety of driving experience. As I say, slightly larger than real life Monaco, but every road in Monaco is represented here, at least in some way. All the major landmarks are present, and we've licensed all of the major buildings like the casino and things like that. Also, and this is true of real Monaco, I think because of the level of wealth and affluence in Monaco, all the buildings are kind of different. In real Monaco, every building just feels like it's changing architect as you go. So we've tried to replicate that. Every single building is unique. It's not a case of we built a prefabricated building and then cookie-cutted it along like would be typical in a game like this. Instead, we've tried to make it feel as much like real Monaco as possible, and so we've captured that feeling that every single building has a bit of a unique feel and a shape to it. If you look at the minimap, you can kind of get a sense for what the road network looks like, and it is at times a little bit like a bowl of spaghetti. One of the most kind of organic road layouts you'll see in any city, really. There's no sense of a grid layout at all. That makes it really fun when you're driving through at speed, when you're in a pursuit. You've got so many options to like make little decisions and head off through different parts of the city. Makes it honestly really fun once you've got that map knowledge. It's also a really layered road network, so much like real life Monaco, there's a series of tunnels like subterranean underneath the city and underground car parks. We're about to enter one of them. You've then got your kind of ground level roads, and there's also elevated overpasses and roads as well. So it's a really interesting city in terms of its layout and build. True for real Monaco, and we've tried to capture as much of that as possible. So mission now is we're looking to recover an Aston Martin Valhalla.
Yeah.
I'll just mention it again. I said the same thing at the car meet, but like all of these parked cars are to the exact same detail and quality as the player car. There's no step down or level of detail drop in any different car. So the Land Rover is a security car, and we're just teaching the player a mechanic here. So Susie's pressed the button to hide in the car. This is what hiding looks like. He's ducked slightly. Fortunately, in this game, we've intentionally made all of the kind of security and police a bit bumbling. So what we're teaching you here is as long as it can't see you, you can hide, and it'll kind of kill any kind of pursuit system. You've obviously played other games where you'll be getting chased. You go down a side street and you kind of have to just wait. And it might be like a minute or so while the timer ticks down. Not great gameplay. So we kind of wanted to build in a system where once you've broken line of sight, you can just hide and it kind of kills off the pursuit. You have a few minutes. You can fire some questions at me, or we can jump up can jump you into a race if you want to play. Do you want
to? What was the inspiration to be?
Well, it's something that it's something that the Forza community have been requesting for a long time. And it was something that we were just not able to deliver on that franchise. There were reasons that couldn't happen, which I won't go into, but it wasn't possible there. But I knew that there was a big want for it from the community. I would later find out, after having left Playground, actually, that same request was coming from the Need for Speed community as well. They really, really wanted to see it in that game. And so there was just these two like racing communities, honestly the two biggest racing communities, that both had this same want that just wasn't being delivered on. Equally, you know, Tekken's got a good story. There's nothing about the genre that stops it from happening. If a beat-em-up can have a good story, then a driving game can have a good story. Pretty early on, after having started Maverick, Jamie Britton would kind of contact me and ask if he could have a chat with me. I don't know if you've heard of Jamie. So he was the creator of Skins, the TV show. And he reached out. I had a chat with him and was like, right, okay, let's work together. He joined the team. And Jamie's kind of like superpower as a writer is creating like really interestingly flawed characters. Like something that he taught me really on is like people always want to be too kind to their characters. The characters need to have something that's like a little bit wrong with them, and bad things need to happen to them. And because that's what actually ultimately makes you love a character. They should have in them the ability to make mistakes and to do things wrong, because that's one, that's how they're going to learn and grow, and that's two, how interesting things can happen to them, makes for compelling stories. So he just creates really kind of interestingly flawed characters, which is true of every character in this game. There's basically something wrong with all of them, which we won't jump into, but when you play it, I think that once you finish the game, you'd be able to go for each one of them and kind of point out what their flaw was, and that makes them as an ensemble just really interesting. So I knew that there was a want for a story. I early on got the kind of opportunistic person reaching out to me. Then mate, I had a writer where we could go and do it, because the other part of it is it's actually really hard to write good story, good dialogue. I mean, I'm not going to point fingers at anyone, but we've all played games with really kind of really crap dialogue. And well, it's hard to do. Hopefully you've seen this and thought that was pretty good dialogue. I think we've got really talented actors, really talented writers, and I don't think there's anything about this genre that stops them from being able to tell great stories. So I'm really confident, and I'm really excited about it.
So like, obviously Horizon is very much about me. A lot of the stuff you showed here is like there's a car tied to the story beat and you're doing this thing, but there's also that bit where you're buying cars. Is there much in there about like collecting the cars, using them, custom, like using different ones for different scenarios?
It's not a collector fun in the way that Forza is. Instead, because you're kind of investing in these characters, it feels like your version of Theo should have a car that you're invested in that feels like there's a sense of ownership there. And that's what we've tried to go into. We've really heavily invested in customization, the kind of broader suite of customization options in any driving game. And a lot of that customization is about putting personal effects in there and making it feel very human, like putting like the photos you take in photo mode can become a Polaroid that you can attach to your sun visor and really make it feel like there's this sense of kind of humanity and ownership to it. Obviously, all the customization you expect, like changing your spoilers and your rims and stuff, but there's also that layer where it's kind of about really attaching it to those characters. So if you play long enough, you learn enough money, you can buy all the cars, but it's not really an objective of the game or anything like that.
The story is about the cars that are part of that story.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Got it.
I know you briefly mentioned online. Is that the only thing you could do?
People's cars? No, just of course not. We've got a full on. We're not kind of revealing full online stories at the moment, but I'll just summarize. So we have campaign co-op. So you can do two-player campaign co-op. One plays as Theo, one plays as Cass. There's some elements of that which get really like pleasingly intricate in how that co-op is designed as well, where you'll both be doing really quite different activities at the same time. That moments have to intersect in order to like to execute perfectly. It was very, very cool. You can go up to 16 people in a party, and then you can explore the open world together. And from there, you can jump into races and things together. And we have a PvPvE mode, which takes the missions that you'll do as part of the campaign. And whereas in the campaign, you either do them on your own or with a co-op partner, they'll now be team-based. There'll be two teams going into that area to try and steal the same things at the same time. That is very high on chaos. So we start you out in kind of slow cars and no clutch tech. And you have to find the things as you... And we kind of force strategic decisions there. So, for example, there might only be one harpoon, but both teams are going to want the harpoon because that's going to make other parts of the mission easier. But as soon as one team's got it, this other team now needs to kind of change their strategy. Okay, what are you going to do? You need to try and get one of the other clutch techs because they've got this one. Makes it very, very high in chaos. It's very, very fun. Yeah, cool. We're kind of...
Can't wait.
Yeah. Okay.
Cool. All right.
Thank you so much.